Welcome back to another episode of the Reseller's Mindset Podcast. My name is Mike, also known as a used book guy on YouTube, along with my friend and fellow full-time reseller, Johnny B. We help people start and grow their reselling businesses from the ground up. We also have a weekly Zoom call and private Discord for all YouTube members. Head on over to youtube.com/usedbookguy to join the channel and gain access to the full-length podcast, Zoom call, and private Discord today. Let's get into this week's episode.
What is up, everybody? Welcome into another episode of Reseller's Mindset Podcast. Mike next to Johnny. You probably all are tired of hearing me and Johnny, you know, run our mouths every single week. So we decided to dig up a fellow reseller, fellow YouTuber. We got Josh. So he's going to introduce himself down below. And as always, when we have a guest, we're going to pick his brain when it comes to his business and kind of, you know, see where things go. So Josh, thanks for coming on. Introduce yourself. And yeah, man, we're excited to have you here.
All right. So yeah, it's good to be here. My name is Josh. I sell books, CDs, DVDs, that type of stuff full time, eBay and Amazon. For the last few years, I've been doing more eBay full time, but over the last probably about 18 months or so, I've been transitioning more and more towards Amazon and kind of about at a 50-50 split now. So eventually going more towards Amazon. Got a YouTube channel as well. It's just my name, Josh Graff. So go ahead and check that out. But yeah,
It's funny, man. I remember when I first found you on YouTube. This was probably, I don't know how long your channel's been around, but it definitely feels like it's at least been a year since I found you. And I remember you were parting out like sewing machines. Like you had all these damn sewing machines. And since my wife, she, you know, is into embroidery and has embroidery business, I said, this guy's just piecing out all these damn machines. And I remember you were selling some of these little parts for stupid money. You were just buying them because people, every garage sale you go to has those crummy Singer machines like thrown, and they just want them gone at that point. So that is actually how I actually discovered you. And I didn't even know you were like big into media until I actually watched a few videos and I said, wait a minute, this guy is literally doing the same thing as me.
Yes, I still can't walk by a good sewing machine sometimes. Every now and then I probably pick two or three up a month, but that's about it right now. But it's so easy just to buy one for like 20-30 bucks, pull like 30 parts off of it and sell each of those parts for like 20-30 bucks. It's
easy for you, dude. You know all the parts. You know what brands are the best, what models are. But with anything, right? There's some, you got to pay your dues to kind of get a little bit ahead in the reselling world.
It does take a little bit of knowledge. And the sell-through rate is even worse than Johnny's. So that's the biggest problem with it.
Yeah. So
you just need thousands of it to make up for it. Just keep buying them. It's fine. It'll be fine.
You are a prime example of one of my, converts, I like to call us, people that started with eBay and slowly migrate to Amazon. Now, you're not fully there yet, but in my deep, deep heart, I do believe one day eBay will be a tiny percent of your business and Amazon will be a higher. I know you're laughing about it now, but give it some time, dude. All right. It takes a little bit. You got to warm up. You got to warm it up a little bit. You might go away like Johnny did. Then all of a sudden you come crawling back. So what kind of, you know, you're heavy into eBay. Like how many listings do you have currently?
So right now, let's just look. I got it right here. I should know this off the top of my head. I want to say it's 13,000.
Yeah.
13,452. Looky there.
That's a lot of work in eBay land. And you, I know you say you primarily focus on, you know, the media aspect. Mm-hmm. Are you like an everything seller on eBay nowadays or what?
So I was an everything seller up until about 6 to 10 months ago. And I finally just said, you know what? I just need to focus on the media because that's always been the biggest portion of my business. And just by focusing in on that, it's made my time worth so much more because I can just focus on one task, get that one task done, and then go on to the next one. When you're selling everything, you're having to switch from one thing to the next and you're all over the place. It just makes so much more sense to just focus in on one thing.
So let's walk us through the day of a half eBay, half Amazon day. What does that look like for you?
So days look really weird around here. So we've got three kids. We homeschool here. And one day from the next looks totally different around here. Basically, flexibility is the biggest thing that I love about this business is as long as I'm putting in about 40, 50 hours a week, it doesn't matter when I'm putting in those hours. I can put, so like today we went to the eye doctor and that took a couple hours out of the day. We took all the kids, everybody went to the eye doctor. But after this call, you know what? I'll get off here and I will price 30, 40, 50 books this evening and it'll be just fine. But Right now we're listing about 100 items a week on eBay. So I'm doing about 20 a day on eBay. And then Amazon's whatever's coming in the door. This week we put out 435 to Amazon, which is pretty good week. So just getting done whatever we can done each day.
Do you plan on, I mean, I guess I kind of, I don't know. So say you get in a realm where your Amazon starts overtaking your eBay in terms of revenue. Do you like, I know you laughed about it, but is there a separate universe, Josh, that maybe down the road is fully, committed to Amazon, and then it's like a 90-10 split or like a 95-5 split, or like kind of, the eBay store exists just in case the Grim Reaper on Amazon comes and gets you?
I don't see myself like liquidating my eBay store and all those 13,000 listings. That is a ton of hours of time put into that. And it can turn off a profit even if I'm not putting any time into that. I am starting to mess around a little bit with a VA as far as having them do listings from the photos. We're going to see how that goes. That's one I'm testing out right now. And honestly, pretty happy with the results that we're getting there. Just started that this week. But that was just one thing that we could do to take some time away from eBay. Put a little bit more time on Amazon, but still keep my output the same.
You keep saying we. Does the wife help? I'm going to assume wife, or
Yeah, she helps quite a bit around here. So
so she's actually involved in the reselling business.
it depends. It depends on what we got going on. Some weeks she does more than others. Some weeks she doesn't do anything. Some weeks she does quite a bit. It just kind of depends.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that makes sense. So she can basically throw you out the door and say, "Thanks for the business, buddy."
So, what does your sourcing week look like? Are you going out? Are you primarily ordering online and then unpacking a bunch of packing peanuts or what?
I love stuff coming to me. I do not want to live the same life of Mike as like going out, having all these routes and going all the different places. I will do that from time to time, and probably once every about 2 weeks, I'll go out and run a route for a day, two or three times a month at the most. But I really like my inventory coming to me. And a lot of that is just built up from contacts, from different relationships in the business, different people mailing me stuff to my door, and then I have that. Or I've got like relationships with a thrift store in town where I just go and I pick up all their books. Just take the trailer, fill it all the way up, spend a couple $100, and then I can sort it all here on site. I'm here with the family all day long. I don't have to leave and go and do other things. I'm here if I'm needed. And yeah, that's just the way I love getting the inventory right to the door.
So it sounds like you're doing quite a bit as far as the inventory allotment per week. When did you first start upping the game? And we'll just call it bulk for lack of a better. When did you start doing more bulk, like taking it really seriously? Okay, I just need to buy as much as I can because I can make pretty much unlimited money as long as I put in the hours.
That's hard to say when that started. Like, there's been, okay, so it was probably 2020. I was at this estate sale, but they weren't supposed to be having estate sales. The guy was just selling everything in the house. They had to sell the house type of deal. And I wish I'd bought more now looking back on it. But at the time, like, I completely filled my car up. There was no more room for books. But I wish I'd unloaded it and loaded again.
The second trip, yeah.
But man, that was a really good sale too. Like all these like woodworking books and tons of cookbooks that I thought none of the cookbooks had value at the time. Just like I didn't take any of the cookbooks and a whole bunch of them on like type setting and different things like that. Really niche stuff, which was really interesting. Made a ton of money, but that was really my first big purchase from there.
So I'm going to ask you, because I did this last year, have you gone back through your eBay inventory to see what you can send into Amazon?
I did that when I first started on Amazon, but my knowledge of Amazon was so little at the time. I really probably should do it again
Yeah.
with the knowledge that I have now.
I've done it about t two and a half times now, and it's been worth it every time.
Yeah, it's probably time to do that again. I did. So every year in January, I go through the oldest 10% of my store. And I either delist it or end and relist or drastically lower the price. But that's my way of kind of getting through my old eBay inventory, is getting rid of the oldest 10%. And there was one book in there that had been sitting in my store from over 3 years. It was actually on type setting. It was from that big sale like back in 2020. So I guess it was sitting there like 4 years. And I sent that into Amazon and it sold in like less than a week.
Crazy.
I'm curious, What do you do with all the stuff that ain't worth it, right? Because people like me, we don't want to deal with the quantity. And then you have, you keep maybe 15. Well, you do eBay too, so it's probably closer. Do you have a roundabout of like how much percentage of every trailer load you actually list on eBay or Amazon?
It depends a lot on the quality and source of where it's coming from. That makes a huge, huge difference, but maybe 25%, but that includes like sellback companies as well, because I use them quite a bit. I typically work with three sellback companies, but I'm thinking about going down to just one. World of Books is the biggest one. Sell back your book, of course. The second one I work with is Books Run, and I just feel like they've been accepting less and less stuff lately. And then I'll work with pals sometimes because they'll just accept like some random stuff that nobody else wants for some reason.
So what are you doing with the other 75% of Joan?
So I've got two local bookstores that I work with quite a bit, and I set aside stuff for them. And honestly, that's probably like another 25% of the stuff ends up going to them. And then the last 50% of that is either getting donated at a Goodwill not in this town, or it is getting recycled, one of the two.
So, what kind of on your shipping, what do you do there? You're saying you're doing 20 a day, and I'm assuming X amount are going out, and then plus you got your Amazon shipment. Are you doing shipping every day, or are you do on the Amazon, or are you doing it like once a week kind of deal?
Okay. So are you talking on eBay or Amazon here?
Both. Like I don't know how you have your shipping set up. It could be 2 day handling, 3 day, same day handling, etc.
Okay, so for eBay, I have 2 day handling and I have everything stored off site. I've got two 10 by 10 storage units that everything is stored in. They're climate controlled. They cost me like $206 per month, which for 13,000 items, you do the math on that. It's like a
Worth
quarter.
it.
It's
Yeah.
order for the whole year per item. So everything is stored there. So I go there Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays, get everything that I need that has sold, drop off everything that I have just listed, and that usually takes about 1 minute per however many items I have to pull, including my driving there and back, because it's pretty darn close. So then Monday, Wednesday, Fridays, we're doing the shipping. I usually on Tuesdays and Thursdays are usually my heavier Amazon days as far as sending out shipments. If I'm sending out Amazon shipments, since I'm not doing eBay shipping on those days, those are the days I'm usually focused more on Amazon.
So let's talk about processing, because to do what you're doing has to require so many processes. Like what do you do? Like you get a box in the mail, or let's just say 5 boxes in the mail. What's the steps to process those 5 boxes?
So it depends on where it's coming from and like what the plan is for it. So like, and who's sending it to me. So if I have somebody that does a lot of Amazon that's sending it to me and they're already saying, this is not good for Amazon, I'm not going to scan it with Scoutly or even look it up on Amazon. I'm going to go straight to Terapeak, do my research there, price it, and then move on. And it just depends on where it's coming from. It really does.
Gotcha.
Gotcha. Like if I'm pulling a bulk load of books out, like from somebody that's not a reseller, like I've got a trailer load of books from a thrift store, I'm going to make piles. Barcodes are going to go up in one pile. Those are going to get scanned with Scoutly. ISBNs, everything with ISBNs are going to go into another pile. Anything without ISBNs gets set to the side, and I will get to that when I can get to that, because that stuff is what takes the most time. But anything with barcodes or ISBNs, we can get through quick, get it out of here so it's not sitting around. Because I cannot have stuff just sitting around unprocessed, taking up space.
I'm going to get you in the hot seat early on in this podcast. Usually I save these for the end, but I'm feeling a little spicy today. So eBay land, do you promote your listings? Do you feel like they have to be promoted? And also, do you charge for shipping or are you a free shipper?
Okay. I have traditionally promoted my listings in the past. However, recently, like say the last 6 months or so, I've quit promoting anything new that I'm sticking up. And it seems to be doing just fine. Honestly, I've left all my old stuff that was already promoted, because that stuff hasn't sold. It obviously needs the extra help. But I have not promoted anything new going into my store in the last 6 months, and it seems just fine. I charge shipping. I do calculated based on the weight. I do media mail shipping for the majority of media items.
How much is media mail nowadays for like a 1 pound book?
413. I think somewhere around there.
Crazy how much it's gone up just in the past 2 or 3 years. It used to be, you weren't even close to $4. Now we're already over $4.
I think media mail will be done within the next 5 years. I don't think it's going to be around much longer.
Yeah, just because the price doesn't even make sense. I'm curious. So, as a fellow YouTuber, give me the story behind why you decided to start YouTube and why you continually upload videos. Because we know, YouTubers aren't getting rich by any means necessary, especially resellers.
Right. I just enjoy it. I don't know. It's a lot of fun, And it's something like everybody that's doing YouTube wants to build it in order to become something, to have a channel that can make you some money. But it's something I enjoy doing, just going and documenting what I'm doing. And it's some videos I make just so I can look back on later and see where I'm at. Like, I've been meaning to make a video like the top 20 categories I sold last year. I like making that video every year so I can see the split of what I've been selling over the last few years. And so I just enjoy doing that.
Don't
Originally,
you worry that, you've given out all the secret sauce, like the video you just put out talking about, selling DVDs on Amazon. I mean, you gave out some, I mean, the information you gave in there is like top secret information, and anybody can kind of go to their local pawn shop and do exactly what you did. So, I mean, do you ever have that thought in your mind? Like, hey, I'm literally, because I'm in the same boat as you, right? We don't keep any secrets, and I'm just curious what your
I was about
mindset
to
is.
say, this has come from the guy who told everybody how to ungate the whole category.
I mean, I'm expecting royalty checks in the mail. They still haven't shown up. It's been years. But hey, I'm just curious, what your mindset behind putting out the good information that somebody can easily take today and start making money.
I mean, these markets are so large. The media market as a whole is so huge. We might change it a tiny bit, but I don't think we're going to affect the market whatsoever by bringing some more people into it. And the majority of people that watch these videos, they're not going to actually do anything. And if they do, it's going to be for a few weeks or a few months. There's constantly people coming into this space and out of this space, but people that actually stay here long term for several years are pretty rare. You don't honestly see it very much.
And those
Like,
rare people, they would have done it or figured it out on their own eventually, because they're the
yes.
kind that was stuck with it anyway. So I see you have a fancy disc cleaning machine behind you.
Yes, I do.
Did you start with that one, or did you start with little old JFJ?
This was the first one I got
Really?
because I did not want to buy a second one. I got this one, and this isn't, it looks like an AutoSmart, but it's
That's what I
actually
thought.
the older model. It's an,
Oh, okay.
that's how old it is. It's a senior, it's got a fancy touchpad on the top
I
screen.
was looking at that. I thought it was an AutoSmart, just like you said. Okay.
No, it's the model they had before the AutoSmart.
Gotcha.
Basically the same thing, but no, I love this thing. But part of me wants a master, but I'm just not there yet.
Part of everybody wants a master. So yeah, I feel you. So what was it like getting that? What was the learning process for a disc cleaning machine of that caliber?
This thing, there's no learning process. Like, you just pop the disc in and it comes out beautiful. Like, there's no
Magic.
learning process. I laugh every time I watch somebody use a JFJ or like all these tips and tricks. There's no tips and tricks. You just like it just works.
It just
Yeah, but
works.
it's expensive, dude. How much you pay for that thing?
I don't know. It's been about a year and a half ago. It was several thousand
When they
dollars.
give the answer, I don't know. It's a
See?
lie.
Yeah, and that's why us JFJers are over here with our cheap asses on the floor licking this clean after they run through the machine and cleaning up the mess because we're broke, Josh. We ain't got the money, honey. All right. You just decided to jump deep end, no floaties on your arms, whatever. I'm either going to sink or swim real quick and we're going to find out. So that is a huge benefit to kind of just jumping in, and kind of getting that level machine. And that what I always tell everybody, like, dude, it's justified, right? Like anybody watching this, like, look at the amount of disc that's sitting there. I mean, he probably stacked these to show off. It's probably all 40-year-old versions, the same exact DVD and Blu-ray. But I mean, it's justified. He spent the money because he knew he was going to double down on this part of his business. So he paid for that machine 10 times over, 50 times over already since buying it. So just have that in the back of your mind. Like, yeah, the machine's awesome, and I should probably get one. But at the end of the day, I don't even process as many discs as you do. Because your model's different than mine. I mean, everybody's model is different. If I'm only pulling out the JFJ once every 2 weeks, I don't need a fancy, machine that you have. versus you'd probably run that thing every single week to get some of these discs in. And I've even thought about it. What if you just bought like scratched up profitable disc off eBay? Like that's another way you could have inventory just come to your front door because all you got to do is pop them in your little machine and they come out brand new.
Yeah, I think in the video game category, that would make a lot of sense, really. Just
Yeah.
pop ones and resurfacing them. Before I bought this thing, I had like five totes of scratch discs just saved up. So it basically paid for itself within that first month, getting those all out the door.
So let's go back in time. Let's talk about whatever you're doing before, and then what was the trigger for you to start reselling, and then take us a step further than that to leave whatever you're doing before to just do reselling.
Okay. So before I was teaching math at the university here in town, that was my previous career. I taught high school, but I was at the university the last few years before I got here. Now, when I was there, I was also doing a lot of assessment writing on the sides, like ACT, SAT, that sort of thing. And actually, when I left there, it was my plan to do much more of that. I was not planning on to doing more reselling. I was doing kind of reselling on the side for fun and just from extra pocket money. But after I left there, which would have been like May 2021, every day I just wanted to resell more. I didn't want to go write more ACT questions. I just wanted to resell more. And so like every day for the probably about 3 or 4 months, I would just write less and resell more. And then finally I was just like, why don't I just do what I want to do? So here I am reselling now.
So making that transition, because there's a few people in Mike's group who are wanting to make that transition. How did you decide to do it? Was there a monetary goal you must meet, or was there a certain amount of sales you must meet, or what was the goalpost for you taking a walk from what you were doing? Because that's a hard thing to do.
So, because I had the other bit of the assessment writing, I could go out each day and make the dollar amount I needed to. I can't remember what the dollar amount, but I used to have this dollar amount in my mind that this is how much I need to make each day. And before that, we had like a 6 month emergency fund. We were totally fine. If I made nothing for 6 months, we were great. And also, I quit teaching in May. So I was still getting income for like another 3 months over the course of the summer. So I had plenty of extra time there where if I didn't make any money, I was fine. But I would go out each day and just say, hey, I need to make $500 today. And I can either make that writing or I can make that reselling. And I would just kind of balance that. And over the long term, I was just like, I'd rather be doing this reselling stuff than writing all these ACT, SAT type questions.
And was this also during, was this in the same time frame COVID was going on?
Okay, so this would have been like 2021. May 2021 was when
Okay. So still in it, but we're on our way out of it,
I. Yeah,
essentially.
we were on. Now, during 2020, when everything was shut down, I was reselling quite a bit just because,
The
I mean,
money was raining from the sky back then. Yeah.
money everywhere and plenty of free time, so why not?
Very cool. So what would you advise people who are wanting to make that transition now? And yeah, what's some general advice you'd have? Like you said, you had 6 months of savings plus another 3 months of residual income, plus you were still doing part-time writing at the time.
Do a lot of this business on the side before you jump in full time. Like, you should not leave one income source to go build another income source. You should leave an income source after you've already built up an income source and it's already flowing money in. That's the biggest thing. Don't leave income source A to go start income source B. And if you can understand that, then you can go build any business you want.
And half of you didn't understand that, so please rewind and listen to it again.
Yes, because it's very important.
Barry, was there any point you were like, where you had a regret? Like you, sales were low for a month or something? Like, what have I done?
I mean, there's slow weeks, there's slow days, and that's just part of selling anything. Like, people complain about this on eBay all the time, like, oh no, it's a terrible week or it's a terrible day. That's the way it is sometimes. Like, there's going to be slow days, there's going to be slow weeks. And that would be the same if you are selling online or if you had a brick and mortar or wherever you're selling. But I typically look at it over the course of the whole month. Some months are down a little bit, some months are up a little bit, and some months are tighter than others, and some months are really great, but it all works out in the end.
I have people that, because I got a lot of people that enjoy books, enjoy selling books, and they only do eBay. I'm curious about your decision to decide to even open up an Amazon store because everybody is so afraid to, I don't know, step out of their comfort zone and even give Amazon a shot when it comes to media. When I think it, when it comes to media overall, it's definitely the platform you need to be on. But I'm just curious, like, what went through your mind and like, did you feel like it was like kind of scammy, like when you first started watching videos about selling media on Amazon and like you're like, well, I don't gotta take photos and I don't gotta deal with customers, like I don't gotta pack and ship. Like, what was your mindset and what kind of pushed you to give it a shot? And was there like any hiccups or like anything early on where you're just like, I'm done with this, I'm just gonna stick with eBay, I'm not even bothering.
So Amazon feels scammy whenever you start watching videos because some of the people putting out videos are kind of scammy. And so because of that, you start feeling like this whole idea of selling on Amazon is scammy, but it's really not. And the reason I started doing it more when I first started it up was because I wanted to diversify where I'm selling stuff. If something ever happens to eBay, I need some other source of income coming in. So I'm already growing that other income source on the side, and that's what I've been doing with Amazon. Now, Amazon's weird. Amazon's kind of harder to get going because with Amazon, there's really two things you need they don't give you at the beginning. You need that used buy box, and you need to be ungated in the majority of categories. And Amazon does not give you those two things until you start consistently sending in inventory. And that's what I didn't get for that first probably year and a half was I was not sending stuff in consistently enough. And so they did not give me that used buy box and they did not give me the ungates in the majority of categories.
It's so crazy to think about if you just, you know, kind of like you said, diversify a little bit, it kind of opens up a whole nother door and a whole nother income stream. I'm basically working in opposite, right? Like I have my eBay store, it exists, ain't nothing on there, but like if something ever happens, then sure, I know how the platform works. And the idea that got me into Amazon was that I didn't have to take the eBay photos. I didn't have to pack and ship every single order. Like, yeah, the fees are high, but like it's everything's calculated for. Right, even in eBay, there's an eBay fee calculator. You know exactly how much you're going to make at whatever price you sell. So the idea that people kind of get caught up with fees, and just from talking to you just on this podcast, I can tell like you're not the guy that like, oh man, eBay must be down today. Like the sky's falling. Like you just do your work, and the results will come one way or another.
Consistency really will solve the majority of problems in your business. If you are consistently doing the right things, consistently putting out good product, it's going to solve the majority of your issues. Like, pick a number for how much you need to make on eBay each week or on Amazon, figure out how many units you need to be doing, do those number of units, and eventually everything's going to fall into place.
I agree with that 100%. Consistency is the number one thing. Two is processes to help your consistency be better. I think those two things are very, very critical. But number one, I gotta believe it's consistency. And that's teachable to an extent, but it really comes from the willpower of the person being, okay, I gotta do it. Today's another day. I did it yesterday, but guess what? I gotta do it again today. It never ends. That's the thing I don't think pe click with many people. It never ends. That's the thing. And they'll give up, or they'll want a day off, or they didn't do a draft bank to take those days off, and then they fall off the wagon. And then some people come back, and then some people don't, unfortunately.
It's not hard though. I mean, look how little bit of hours I put in last year, right? Like, it's not hard to make money reselling by any stretch of the imagination. I mean, unless you're buying pure garbage to list on eBay at dirt cheap prices, like, it's really not hard to make money reselling. I always say if I could, you know, train a chimpanzee to go scan stuff in stores, I could just sit at home all day and get a paycheck every 2 weeks. It is not hard, but you're right. Consistency. You can't train it, Johnny. I do, you know, coaching calls every single month with one-on-ones, and it's like Johnny says, like I can sit here and tell you if you send more, you're going to make more money. If you go out more and source more, you scan more items. The only difference between us three sitting here is how many items we're scanning on a single week. That's going to decide how much we're sending to Amazon, which is going to decide how much we get paid. There is no different at all. Like that's all it comes down to. But I can't tell you to go do it. And then you're just like, well, I don't feel like doing it today. Well, then you lose that day of productivity and you lose that day of sales. Like Josh was saying when he started, he wanted to do $500 a day. in sales and profit that he's actually out there sourcing. But you gotta get off your ass and actually go do it. And I don't think it's teachable. And I think the world of reselling, it's anybody can start it. That's a great thing, but it's also a bad thing because a lot of people, they need the structure to say, hey, Johnny, you better get to work today, right? Or because
I don't want to.
you're by your, and when it's just you, right? If I'm gonna sit around and be like, ah, nah, Josh, I'm good today. I'm not leaving the house. And you're like, dude, it's 70 degrees out. It's beautiful. Go scan some stuff. I'm like, nah, man, I don't got it. I'll catch up on it tomorrow. Like, that ship sooner or later is gonna sink.
So, you've been doing this for a significant amount of time. What do you think is the biggest lesson learned?
Oh man.
I know.
I find it crazy in our industry that like somebody that's just been doing this for like 3, 4, 5 years is somebody that's been around for a long time. It's really kind of weird. Like, Mike, how long have you been making these videos? Like, you're
Too long, dude. Too long. I couldn't. I'm actually
longer
gonna
than I've been
look.
reselling. I know that.
It's probably been, a solid 4 or 5 years of putting out videos every single week.
I know we say that, but like in any other industry, if you were to say, I've been doing this 4 or 5 years, that's not enough to be like really there a long time.
Senior management, essentially, right?
I know, like you're just barely rising up in the ranks of the.
Well, reseller years are like dog years. What every year reselling is like 7 years for everybody else.
And so like that's always where I kind of struggle with this type of stuff. Like, yeah, I've been doing this 3 or 4 years, but that's not really a lot when I compare that to other industries. But I guess we haven't here. But anyways, your question was, what again?
What is your biggest learning experience across your e or your reselling journey?
I guess the biggest thing I thought at the beginning that I don't know now is, or let me phrase. For the biggest thing that I didn't know at the beginning that I know now is like, you've got to be patient. Stuff is going to eventually sell. Like, and part of that was from kind of starting selling a lot more in 2020. In 2020, if you listed something, it just,
Different rules. Yeah.
oh my goodness. Like, stuff just sold as soon as you listed it. But just have patience. It's sitting in Amazon's warehouse, it'll sell there, or it's sitting in my storage unit, it'll sell eventually. Like, just be patient with these items. Don't think about them. They will sell.
See, I didn't start the year before COVID. I'd like to compare the year before COVID and the year after COVID and see how similar they are, because I'm not including the years of COVID as any kind of solid data.
Those were some wild years. Like,
Yeah.
stuff
I
would,
made stupid money then.
and like anything would sell.
Exactly.
I think the thing with the conversation though is, you did it the correct way, Josh, right? Like, so you don't need, you don't need your book to sell today, right? Like, you had it, you had the money set aside. And in today's world, unfortunately, most people are, we need instant gratification, right? Like, that's why Amazon delivers your shit same day, next day. And unfortunately, in the reselling world, I can't afford to wait more than a week for this to sell. So it also benefits you that you made the transition in a way that actually made sense, where you didn't need your stuff to sell that same week. Like, you didn't need to take that immediate payout from eBay or Amazon to kind of go fund your business. And it's hard, but I always tell everybody, listen, you were doing your job and you hated it for 10 years. What's another 6 months of building a business on the side going to do to you? Like, you already been dealing with it.
Yeah, you can build this up slowly and it can be really good. I mean, I got 13,000 items. I don't care which dozen or two or three dozen of them sell over the next day or two. Like, some of them will sell, most of them won't, but enough of them will sell that I can put money in my pocket, I can pay the mortgage, and we can all be good. This is where like 95% of our income comes from, is selling this stuff online. And it doesn't matter which of these items sell, some of them will. It's a guarantee with 13,000 of them. Enough of them will that the bills are all paid.
So we talk about relationships quite a bit. And earlier on, you said you had relationships with a couple bookstores. How did that come to be and why did it come to be? Was it solving an issue?
So both of the bookstores I'm working with, the used bookstores, are both like newer used bookstores, believe it or not, which I do think there's a bit of a revival right now in the used bookstore market.
Yes.
So one of them is a younger gal that she bought out the used bookstore in town, which, oh my goodness.
Turnkey operation, sure, yeah.
looks so much better now. Like, it was claustrophobic walking in there before. I didn't work with them before because like I didn't want to walk into that building. But I take her about two totes worth of books. She looks through them, usually buys half of them, gives me cash, and then we walk out. And it's absolutely a beautiful deal. I'm in there for like 10 minutes. Amazing. And then the other one, they will just take anything I take to them, but they have a limit to what I can bring them each week. But they're like 3 minutes from my house. So like I go by there every week, very consistently, same day, same time, and we have a great time. I talk to them. You got to talk to these people when you go in there. You can't just want to go in there and just want to have a business transaction. You got to go in there, talk to people, smile. They need to be happy to see you.
Yeah, I think that's very critical because if it's totally robotic transactional, they're not going to throw you a bone here and there or give you an opportunity that would have never come your way if you were not nice and culture just human decency, honestly. Treat them like a human and they'll treat you a human right back.
Well, my natural inclination is to like go in there and just make the transaction and go on. It's business. That's what we're doing. But like, there's got to be more to these relationships if you want to build these relationships and have them actually grow long term.
I agree. It's and it's so silly how you can easily land some of these, but again, it's that mindset of, we so many people that resell rely solely on thrift stores, and it's like I try to get people away from these damn thrift stores as far as I possibly can, and it for some reason it's like this, you can't escape the orbit of the sun, right? It's like the thrift stores, they gotta go to that Goodwill. Like, I'm curious. Thrift stores in your area. I know you're not out running in them all the time like I am, but have you seen the change as well in thrift stores in your area? Are prices going up? Are they selling things online? Like, what's your take on the thrift store situation?
Prices are definitely going up some. I don't see the outside of the big chains, the smaller ones. I usually go to the smaller thrift stores. That's where I'm going. They're still not selling online, at least in my area. The big places like your Goodwills or your Salvation Armies or whatever you have in your area, don't go in those. Like, just don't. Like,
Nobody's going to listen to you, dude. Good try, though.
every couple of months to look around, but like, now, I did go to a Goodwill grand opening a while back and I did absolutely great. Like, they had this end cap that was really nice that I just took the whole end cap.
Of
But
the places to source from, thrift stores are at the bottom. I'd rather go to a garage sale before I go to a thrift store, honestly. They are pretty much bottom rung, and also they're farther away from me, to be fair. But even if they were around me, I still think they would be bottom tier sourcing opportunities in the world of media, honestly. Good.
The one thing about thrift stores is if you can get in to just buy all their books and convince them to quit selling books,
Yes.
that can be very, very good. So going in, building relationships, convincing them to quit selling books, or to just have one small bookshelf of books so people will keep donating books there because they know they sell books, but then buy all the books. That's the better route to take, in my opinion. Let them sell.
Absolutely. Like, you're just the solution to a problem. They get more floor space to put out things that actually move in their store for more money. Absolutely. If you land that kind of deal, yeah, work with the Goodwills, work with the Salvation Slimies all day long.
Salvation Slimies, dude. You might have said it before, but that's a new one to me. Like, I feel like we need like t-shirts that got Slimer on the front from
Yeah.
Ghostbusters. Yeah, dude. It's why media, man. Like, their media sucks. Everybody, the media's everywhere. It stinks. There's low dollars. Like, most of it's junk. Like, why in the world would you want to build a business around selling media?
Even when I was an everything seller and I was just selling everything I would come across that I could make a few bucks on, like media was still always my biggest category. And a big part of that is just it's cheap. This stuff is dirt cheap. You are buying, there's a Salvation Army I can get to in like 20 minutes that the books are a dime. I mean, like, there's not very many good books, but they're a dime. Like, you can buy 10 books for a dollar. I mean, like,
You can buy out their whole store and probably come out ahead at a dime.
I've thought about it a few times, but
Right.
it's not good quality there at this.
Well,
But like this stuff is always cheap. It's everywhere. And like people need it gone. We're solving a big problem for people by taking this stuff away. And so there's a lot of people that are in this business and they don't even spend anything as far as cost of goods goes. Like their whole model is just taking the free books. And while that's not something I focus on a lot because like you got to advertise that a lot more and do some other things that I really just don't want to spend the time doing. Like, it's easy to get books. They're everywhere.
Yes. Sourcing should never be the issue, honestly. I don't care if you're rural or you live in a major city. If you're up in Alaska, you got a computer. I hope you have a computer in Alaska because you're gonna be really bored otherwise. But anyway, so we have Amazon, we have eBay, we have a couple of bookstores. Do you have any other sources of income that are adjacent to your business that you have going on?
So I've tried cross-listing to like Mercari, Poshmark, whatnot, Etsy. It feels like it should be a good idea. It always feels like it should be good, but like the sales just are not there. I tried Etsy this year. I started that in January, which it's still January, but I'm seeing no results there. I like the idea of diversifying, just having them out other places, but man, it's just not worth it. I don't think.
Yeah, I tend to agree. I mean, to for even to do Etsy, if I was just to import my eBay store, it's going to cost me $1,100 just to try it out. I mean, just to try it out to see if it works or not. That's ridiculous. And then you know what? I'll have to pay another $1,100 in 4 months.
Yeah, that's the biggest problem with Etsy. If Etsy was free to list on, I would probably stick more stuff over there. I've
Or
got
add a subscription fee like eBay does for insertion fees, right?
Right.
I get the one-time fee, but every 4 months, come on.
And Etsy search is a lot different. They want you to do a lot more like tagging and putting like
Yeah.
stuff. And that's just, it's something I don't want to put the time into doing because my time is better spent pricing stuff for eBay, doing my photos for eBay, or sending stuff off to Amazon. If I'm doing those activities, I'm making so much more money than I am putting labels on Etsy listings to try and get stuff to sell that's probably going to sell anyways. And I know some booksellers that are having really great results on Etsy, but for me and the type of books I come across in my area, it's not the right type of thing.
So you're a YouTuber, which means you want to be famous one day. So why aren't you doing live selling?
I tried it. So I tried it. The problem with live selling is you got to schedule it in advance, and then you've got this time window where you're stuck and you've got to do it at that time. Like, I do this business so that I can have a flexibility of my schedule. Scheduling live shows on Whatnot or wherever else is messing up my schedule. Then I'm like, I've got this hour, 2 hour window where now I can't move things around.
My schedule is messing up my schedule. You need a t-shirt. I love
Like,
that.
I don't want to do Whatnot.
I just don't want to do it.
No.
I'm in the same boat. I'm in the
I wouldn't
same
want to
boat
do it
with it. You
either.
got to focus on what works. We kind of talked about, doubling down where you're getting results. And that's why I'm a firm believer as you continue to grow your Amazon business, the dark side will continue to pull you in and get stronger and stronger and stronger. But like you said, just like you started with eBay from when you were working, you build it on the side, see where it goes. You can adjust down the road. Just what's the most expensive book you've sold ever? Do you know?
Man, I don't know.
Me
They're all the
neither.
same. I've sold a bunch around like the $500 mark. Like, I know I've been around that mark quite a few times. I don't think I've ever hit that $1,000 mark, though, as far as, oh, wait. No. I had a set of books this last year. They were all these like train railroad Santa Fe books. And most of them were like numbered and signed. And it was this giant 12 volume set. I think that sold for like 975 or something just shy of that $1,000 mark.
How much did you pay for it?
It was on consignment. So I do consignment with one person. It's a family member. They buy out estate sales at the end, and I take all the media.
That's cheating, dude. Wait a minute. You got a family member who does estate cleanouts. You're a cheater. I mean, that's all there is to it.
I've told you I don't want to run these thrift store routes. The inventory comes to me. That's the
I
way
will
I.
do anything but walk in Goodwill. Love that. So What is it like juggling? Because I hear some of this from Mike, because he does all the heavy lifting on the YouTube front. I just show up. What is it like juggling that with the reselling business?
That's really hard and interesting. Like, if I have to not do something, I don't do YouTube because YouTube is not a primary source of income for my family whatsoever. So if the ball gets dropped somewhere with all these balls we're juggling,
Yeah.
YouTube is the first ball that I drop, and I drop it quite frequently and don't put out videos. If
Is
I
it the same for you, Mike, or is that ball number one for you?
I wish it was ball number one for me. I wouldn't even sell on Amazon. I'd be like my fake background. I just act like I sell on Amazon. Yeah, I wish. I mean, it's different for me, right? Because we have the group. So like,
Yeah, I mean, there is some responsibility because of group members and they're giving you money. Yeah.
100%, right? I got the one-on-ones. Like, I got, I think, 11 or 12 one-on-ones tomorrow. So like, all day tomorrow, I'll be doing one-on-one. So it's a little bit different than me, but like, it's just one of those things where I got a YouTube editor and I only do the podcast and one video a week now. So it's really, there's no burden on that front besides just being in the Discord every single day and trying to answer people's questions. But that's why we got the weekly calls, right? And even that, we cut back the calls. So everybody gets a call once a week. I mean, we're only charging $2.99. Like, how much can we possibly give people for $3? So,
So instead of increasing the prices and maintaining the same, you kept the prices the same and lower the calls. Genius. Genius, Mike.
genius, yeah. And I paid you to do an extra one, so it's one less call
Yeah.
I have to do, right?
And I
So
have to do more.
it all
He
works
figured it
itself
out,
out.
this clever son of a gun.
It all works itself out, like Josh says. But there are things where, I do the Amazon influencer program, right? And like, when I don't have time to do that, then guess what? And then nothing's getting uploaded on that front. There's some other things I'm working on this year as well. And those are like, do I have extra time to get them done this week? Like, to work on this side fun project that eventually turns into another stream of income. I will say this, all the things I try to focus my extra time on, I'm like Josh, where like, I see it's going to take time. It's like a 6 month, maybe to a year, 2 year plan, but eventually it needs to make me some type of money. I'm not going to commit a bunch of my time because we can just go out and source more. At the end of the day, we sell books. It's everywhere. Everywhere you go, you just drive an extra 10 minutes, you're going to find more of it. So I have to be strategic, just like you two gentlemen. And but yeah, it's a little bit different for me on the YouTube front because of the group. If the group didn't exist, I mean, honestly, like 2024, I had weeks, months where I just thought to myself, if I just cut the group out completely and said goodbye to you suckers, like, I'd probably make a shit ton more money reselling because I wouldn't have to worry about any of it. But for me, I get the paid benefit of, I guess, the feel goodness. And that's why Josh does it, because I know what YouTubers make in a reselling world. They don't make nothing. You feel good if you can just help one person kind of get out of their situation. So it's like you get paid in good karma, I guess. So my karma bank is hopefully seven figures somewhere along the road, and hopefully it comes back. But yeah, it's tough being a reselling YouTuber. I think a lot of people don't see it. And then when like a reselling YouTuber kind of steps back, they're like, oh, what's going on? Well, you got to focus on things. Life happens, and YouTube is at the bottom of the rung unless you're making, six figures doing it, which a percent of YouTube resellers are making that.
Yeah, the reselling YouTubers, that's of all of YouTube, if you look at the numbers and people and the subscribers, it's very small in compare when you're comparing the different categories. Because there's only so many of us that actually want to resell, right? And we're not a lot of us, I mean you two guys, you aren't you some of it, but you don't do it all the time, like the Instagram haul kind of videos, like the other categories do to try to boost up those numbers. It's very interesting. You both convinced me never to do YouTube. Congratulations.
Yeah, steer clear of it. Just have people that do YouTube pay you, and then you just every year you'll get extra more. Soon enough, I'll just promote the group, Johnny, and you'll do all the calls. All right, maybe I'll bring Josh on, and he can do the calls, and like I'll just be a figment of imagination.
You know how I like to prepare? I have my resignation letter in a file folder just in such an event were to occur.
That's all right. Josh is right here. Now that I had him on the podcast,
You
now he's
hear that, Josh?
obligated.
It's going to circle to you. The group will all be yours one day.
He's obligated now. We're leaving it to him. Johnny put you in the will for when he gets canned. You got to
I mean, this
take
is a
his
video
spot.
will that's going on right now. This is exactly the key setup we always wanted.
Is tough though to juggle things, man. And you got a lot going on. And we talk about it all the time. Like, you got kids. I got cats. Like, I can't compare to that. So the idea that you have this flexible schedule, and Johnny's the first one of like, yo, Josh, you need a schedule that's set in stone, or you're never going to make it. And you're like, yeah, whatever, dude.
No. So I do not have a daily schedule that is set in stone by any means of the imagination. Like, there's no way to make that happen. Like, I've thought about making a group too. I'm in all these Discord groups, and they're a lot of fun and definitely worth the $2.99 that I'm paying to be in your group. Like, oh my goodness, that's so cheap. But the thing is, like, I don't want to have this hour or 2 hours that's blocked off every single week where I've got to be there at that specific time. That just does not work for my schedule. I need that open in case I need to do something with the kids, or I had to do something with the kids earlier in the day and I need to get eBay done or Amazon done or whatever that is. And having that flexibility in my schedule is very important to me. So that's the way I do things the way I do them.
Right, but you have a routine that you can make adjustments in your schedule, right? Like you have a general idea of how you want your schedule to go, but kids and the world acting up, but you account for that and you just follow the routine. Okay, I had to do this. We had to go to the hospital. Billy broke his arm. Hospital's done. Okay, it's back to it kind of deal. Correct or am I wrong?
To a certain extent. So like I ship Monday, Wednesday, Fridays. Those have to get done. But if something happens up and I know Wednesday mornings are going to be messed up, I'll go to the storage unit late on a Tuesday night. I'll be there at midnight, get my stuff the night before. That way I can still ship it out with
Yes,
like.
exactly. It's like having a draft bank. Like if you're out sick or you're in the hospital, you can still launch your draft or tell the wife or the doctor to get, grab your cell phone and do it for you, right? But
Exactly.
yeah, that's exactly right. You can be flexible, but you do have a routine.
Also, I don't care as much about daily listings. I care more about weekly listings, and that gives me a lot of flexibility that way. I know a lot of people are so worried about the algorithm and the daily listings. And yes, daily listings is going to help the algorithm, and it is going to be better for your store in the short term. But like long term, it doesn't really matter. You're getting the listings up, they're going to be eventually sell. As long as you've got the space and the space is cheap, which, I'm here in Oklahoma, space is cheap, it doesn't matter how long they take to sell.
Right, if it's desirable, and that's the thing with media, you never know when it's going to be desirable. But to what I was going to say is, as long as it's a desirable item, it's eventually going to sell. But media, sometimes in bookland, we don't know. It looks cool. We have solds in the past, but then again, it'll sit on your shelf for 2 years and then all of a sudden we'll sell. It's like, why did you sell in the 90-day window that Terapeak or eBay said? That's something out of our control for whatever reason.
The daily listing on eBay is BS because I rarely list, and when I do, it sells. So the idea that, like, I got a perfect example. I got to list this on eBay. It's been sitting here for a while, right? This dude from Crosby, Stills and Nash, it's signed by him, right? So like I just got to list it. I guarantee it sells the same day. I'm going to be the lowest price. I'm going to do my 2.2% promoted listing, so I'm over everybody else. But like I haven't listed anything in months, gentlemen, and this will sell within the week that I listed because it'll be the
Because it's a
lowest price.
desirable item.
It's
That was
crazy to me.
unsigned and he listed that. There's no telling how long it would sit for.
Yeah, I know. You got to think a little bit to the next level when it comes to the resale and stuff. And so many people, like we were talking about, right? It's the flashiness. Like that's why the Amazon marketplace comes off as scammy because 90% of people in the Amazon space are pushing courses and it's scammy. It is what it is at the end of the day. And in eBay land, it kind of goes one or two ways. You either have the people that think eBay sucks, but they still rely on it as their income and say it's always broken, or you got the people that are just sitting on the sidelines, not out here in all this nonsense social media, and they're just absolutely crushing eBay, kind of like you. Like everybody we bring on that does eBay is like, I'll do six figures on eBay easily. And it's just like it's crazy to me the drastic change. And I'm sure you see it as a YouTuber. Like, what's your take on like the landscape when it comes to reselling and content creation, especially around eBay? Because the majority I see is that there's always problems with eBay and this is down or this is a quick way to get more. To delete your listings and relist your listings is like always a catch 22. Like, what's your take on it?
A lot of the people that are like spouting off these like, here's how you fix the algorithm or here's these things, they're trying to get views. That's what they're doing. They just want to get some YouTube views, and or maybe they think it works or maybe it helped just for a little bit, but none of those changes are long-term solutions. Quit looking for the short, quick fix. Think long-term. Don't just think this week or last week or next week. We're thinking months out, years out here. when you're building these listings. And not everybody can wait, I know, for things to sell for 3, 4 years like I do. Not everybody has access to cheap space like I do. It's one of the benefits of living out here nowhere. Like if you're on one of the coasts, you can't get cheap storage units. I understand that. But since I can wait for things to sell forever, I just do that. And I'm not going to get caught up in all this nonsense on how to increase the algorithm junk because like there's no reason to.
It'll work though. You'll become more famous than you've ever been on YouTube. If you do 6 months of clickbait, the sky is falling eBay videos, dude, you will be so famous you won't even be able to go out to eat in your little town in Oklahoma.
And you'll sell so many courses.
Oh,
And courses. You can launch a group.
No. So, what are some final words you want to leave us with? You have an audience, and you have Mike's audience. What do you want to tell Mike's
All
audience?
10 of us. Yay.
All right, everybody unsubscribe from Mike and come subscribe to
There's the play right there.
there we go. That's what we're here for. Leave his $2.99 group. I'm going to make a new group that's going to be $299.
I've actually made it a point to start saying $2.99 because I think the reselling world is so accustomed when I say $2.99, it just hits like you did, right? It's like $299, they think. So now every time I say it, I'm like, $2.99.
Had people confused by that. But really the biggest thing is be consistent in this business. Think long term, don't think short term fixes. Like if sales are down for a week, that's no big deal. If they're down for 2 months, you've got a problem. And the only way you can think through that is if you've got an emergency fund or you've got some other source of income and you need to have one of those two things. You either need to have another job or have a big enough emergency fund that it doesn't matter if you don't make money for a couple of months.
Yeah, man, I agree 100%. And it's not overnight instant success like you might see out there, but I preach the same thing you do. You got to be financially secure when you make these decisions. And starting your own business is it's a big deal, right? And you want to do it. And I mean, I didn't even have the kids to take care of, so I can't imagine being in that situation. It's probably scarier than ever, but if you do it the right way, there's no risk. There's just reward if you're willing to put in the time. You could have quit your job and you could have just, sat around for 3 to 6 months. But even then, right? Like you still would have been able to go get another job because you had the money set aside. And I think that's the big takeaway here. So Josh, we appreciate you hanging out with us and all of his YouTube information, all of his social medias will be down in the description. So make sure you go comment, subscribe, join his $299 a month group. He will never do that. He's like me. He's a man of the people. So we appreciate you hanging out with us tonight, Josh.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to another episode of the Resellers Mindset Podcast. Today's full episode and all previous episodes are available to all YouTube members, along with the weekly Zoom call and private Discord. Head on over to youtube.com/theusedbookguy and consider joining for as little as $2.99 a month.